Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast 63, or Season 2, Episode 5. We got a fun one for you guys this week, and we also have another remote episode. So Lou's up in the rafters this week. Lou, say hi to the listeners for us.
Hello down there, everyone.
It's almost that time. We're almost going to be in Gentile Arena. We're weeks away. We're a shorter time away from a secret scrimmage, which we will talk about in a little bit. But this week we got a few different news items. We have an article to talk about. We have some recruitment news. We have some scheduling news. And then we'll hop into the middle part of our conference discussion. So we're going to talk about three more teams, talk about how they are going to fare in the Missouri Valley Conference, and more importantly, how they are going to compare to our loyal Ramblers. So stay tuned and enjoy this episode. Thanks.
He jumps, he passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots off the rim. Ralph gets it, scores. It's over. It's over. We won. We won the ball game. Viola won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
All right. So here is the start of our news section. The first thing we got, which is always one of my favorite things to talk about, is recruitment news. So, no, we did not sign another recruit. We did not give him a commit from a third recruit. God. I know that would have been nerve-wracking. But one guy that we were tied to for the better part of the whole summer, four-star power forward Jacoby Coles out of Texas, I believe. Just like last week, he tweeted out that he had narrowed down his top six schools to us, Notre Dame, Minnesota, Texas A&M, TCU, and then Butler, and he ended up going with Butler. But the point I wanted to make, and Lou, you know, you can comment on this too, I think it's really cool that we're in the same conversation as those six teams. I mean, those six teams are power schools. They've had a lot of recent success, especially with, you know, Butler a few years ago. TCU's constantly been in the top 25. Notre Dame, of course. I mean, they're always going to be up there. But Lou, what do you think about us making that top six with those big schools?
So I think it's great, especially if it's not a kid right off the bat. It's not a kid from the Midwest. I think that's huge. Usually we just only think about being able to get kids, and there's nothing wrong. We've had great success with guys local and guys from just around the area. But the fact that our name and our team kind of coaching staff have gone out to reach other parts, and Cole's kind of playing down in Texas, so our names got to him. But then just being compared to other teams in his top six or in any recruit's top six that would consider us as one of these teams, and these are big program teams. They might not always win the national championship or go to the Final Four, but they're big money programs. They're big historical traditional programs. So it's just really interesting, and it has to be fun. Like, Notre Dame has a history of NBA guys. Minnesota right now is on the verge with Rick Pitino's son there with his young coach. Texas A&M, Buzz, is down there. So, like, big-name coach who's actually close with Porter. TCU, so, and then he ultimately went, and people, funny enough, he went with Butler. So a former Missouri Valley school and stuff like that, but now big time with the Big East, so just those are big kind of schools, and it's just the fact that we're connected to it is huge, and especially a talent like a four-star, small forward, like power forward player is kind of huge for us to kind of say maybe we make it that big of an impact recruiting.
Yeah, hopefully we can get someone of his talent and caliber within the next couple of years. I mean, I think we have, like, really good recruits coming in the next, you know, this year and next year too, but I think it's just a little bit different level when you're talking about, like, a four-star, you know, a stretch forward who can shoot the ball, drive to the hoop, is really athletic. That's kind of like someone we haven't really had in the program in a while. So, you know, it's you're scratching that, like, Dante Ingram type or Milton Doyle type. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as those guys, but, like, those caliber, like, skilled players. But to go along with that, you know, we've lost a few guys to Kansas State recently, which is kind of funny. There have been two or three or four guys from Chicago who have put us and Kansas State in the same, you know, top three, top four choices. And it's just another thing that I've noticed, that we've noticed, that losing guys to that school, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, it's a good thing to be in consideration with teams like Kansas State, Notre Dame, and all that kind of stuff. So just kind of an interesting trend that I think we've noticed, and I'm sure for years to come is going to be like that too, that we're going to be up there with some of those big schools. Wouldn't you agree, Lou?
Yeah, no. Kansas State, for those people that might not remember, is we played them Elite Eight. Kind of blew them out, actually, funny enough, but they're a school that consistently makes it to the tournament. Especially in recent years, they're just consistent base of always getting there, always having a presence in postseason play. And then now they've just, and actually for people who kind of want to know, oh, it's only one school. Iowa State has done a thing too now with kind of going into Chicago, into Indiana, Missouri, and then bringing guys back out to Iowa State. Most recently, Iowa State got, I believe his name is Talen Thornton Tucker, who ended up actually, after playing 1 year, was a great and talked about drafty. I don't believe he got drafted, but he's with the Lakers right now, I believe, in some capacity. And then Iowa State actually got other kids from Chicago, from other good public schools. So now you just see Kansas State now, most recently, for people following, they got a kind of a small forward, power forward, or just a big guy from, I believe he went to Chaminade down in St. Louis. So they're getting guys in our era. They've gotten guys from Chicago. So those are things we're going to compete with. So those are now schools that people are going to think of Loyola with, especially since we have a record in big time postseason against Kansas State. We have something to show. But now maybe this is where scheduling comes in. We'll talk about that maybe later, about like playing these big teams helps us fight and maybe get that. You see that in college football all the time. College football, you see these schools, because especially they only have a few amount of games, they schedule against the teams they're recruiting against. So they can have that kind of one over, and they get the recruits there to see that, hey, we're a pretty good program. So, yeah, no, I think it's just cool, and recruiting is a big thing. But funny enough, we're actually done technically for the 2020, and we're over for the class of 2020. So maybe we're trying to move toward 2021, but again, recruiting is always a huge thing because it's about helping impact right away, and it's also looking for long-term success in a team.
Yeah, speaking of teams that we're recruiting against and teams we are going to play against, we have some fun news. We found on Twitter that we are going to have a secret scrimmage, which it's like the worst-kept secret in college basketball. Everyone has these secret scrimmages, which I think pretty much means nothing but that it's not really open to the public or not open to fans. We can't really buy tickets to it. But we are going to have a secret scrimmage at Gentile Arena against SLU, against St. Louis University. And, you know, they're only a couple hours south of us, a few hours south of us. And there are probably going to be kids in the future coming from Central Illinois or Southern Illinois that we will be competing against as far as recruitment goes. But Lou, what do you think the impact of having a secret scrimmage against Lou is going to be on this team this year?
So I think that's huge actually for us because if people don't remember, we kind of talked about this when we talked about our non-con Atlantic 10 opponents. But SLU was in the NCAA tournament last year. They actually had a great kind of sneaky way into the tournament. And that's just really interesting. They won the Atlantic 10 tournament champions, and then they made it to the first round. I'm not saying they played a close game. They only lost by 14, I think it was, to Virginia Tech. So just it's an interesting team, and they're getting guys from that area. So for us, I think this really is a big start because this is a team that won last year, and they won their tournament. We didn't win our conference tournament. We went to the NIT, but they went to the NCAA tournament. So they didn't make a big splash in the NCAA tournament, but that's a winning team right there. And especially in a conference that we are starting to play more teams frequently, and we kind of wanted to start becoming familiar with a conference like the Atlantic 10. I think SLU is a great team to start building a relationship with, or even a rivalry, because I would love to see this back and forth St. Louis, Chicago thing going on, because people already go down for the Arch Madness. So if we made this game kind of a late December or something around, people would flock down, especially on a weekend. It's not that far. So I think right away to start kind of a practice with a winning team from last year, but also a team that's local and you can get a vibe and understand what the team is, that'd be great for our culture.
Yeah. And if listeners don't remember, last year we had a secret scrimmage against Indiana out in Bloomington. that I believe did not go so well.
From our sources, that went again. This is why it's also tough. You have to find sources, but as we joke, as a closed practice, this is. There's really no stats taken. There's no box scores at least posted. That's a big thing. Unless you find a player taking a picture of his or his score. But last year, from our sources, yeah, we didn't fare well against Indiana, which again is their huge powerhouse school. So I wouldn't, again, is if we went in there and beat everyone, then I'd kind of say, oh, Final Four again. But I think a game like this, a team that's kind of, I would say, close to our level, especially coming off of a great season they had. Yeah. Pardon?
That's what I was getting at. That's like where I was trying to like to get to is that I think this game is winnable, and I think it's like more our skill level. And I think that Porter did a good job, or however that came about, this game came about, to start to play teams. You know, they are going to be very good this year, but I think it's very much at our skill level of a competitive team. So I'm excited to see whatever news comes out of it, whatever the result is. And I'm really excited to see like who starts. I don't know if they're gonna post that, but I'd be really interested to know.
That'd be great for us to know.
Yeah, who's starting at point guard? Who's starting, you know, that other forward position besides like Lucas? So I don't know. I'm interested to know what happens in that game. Maybe we'll try to do some digging and find out anything we can about that game when it comes around. Is it the 22nd? I believe. The secret scrimmages, yeah. I think it's the 22nd. So that's only, 10 days away, something like that? Basketball's starting up soon. It's starting. It actually, there was a charity game yesterday between, like, UTEP and, Texas Tech, I think, or something. So college basketball season has officially begun. That's how I'm looking at it, at least.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, but... moving on from that, couple like team news things. Just this past week, we had former NBA coach. I don't believe he was a head coach, but assistant coach.
Yeah,
Kevin Eastman came in to visit the team, kind of pump the guys up, give them a motivational speech, maybe give them a few pointers that he sees. Lou, do you have a little more information on Kevin Eastman? Maybe you can share with the listeners here.
Yeah, no, just for people to kind of understand, it's talks like these and having people, this is more about experience and also showing a program that we have kind of can build connections. This guy is not from Chicago or anything. He's from New Jersey and everything. So it's not like it's a local guy, but it's a guy who has experience. And I think that's a big thing. He's assistant coaches winning teams with Doc Rivers with the Boston Celtics, won the NBA championship there. So he knows what winning kind of is. A big thing right now is he does go around to teams and kind of helps talk about the structure of what a team is. He's worked with the Clippers trying to figure out their operations as a team. But pretty much it's just that having this person kind of come out and getting Porter to get the guys to pay attention to stuff like this is there's more pretty much options that we can or resources that we can use to get our team kind of better. And that's either listening to talks or playing and going in drills. Or doing kind of some muscle memory stuff, like any way to fix the little things in everyone's game, or at least in their mentality, can help. So that's kind of pretty much what it is. It's one of these talks that I'd probably come in and just say, hey, here's my experience of winning. Here's what I've experienced with players winning and how you guys can do that as well. So it's cool, again, that we even have talks like this. Even better if it was more and more happening every day. So I think that's just great for the team.
I think you touched on it a little bit, but I think the biggest part is like the connections, right? Is Porter being able to make these connections with big names or guys that have coached in the NBA before. And I think it means a lot to these players, I would guess. I mean, I would think that, you know, they'd probably, it's a diverse team. They'd probably want a diverse cast of characters talking to them. So not just like a former NBA coach, but maybe like a trainer who's also a motivational speaker or just someone who talks about, I don't know, life and success. So I think this is a cool thing for sure, but I hope that that Porter keeps it up and brings in different people to talk about different aspects of basketball life and personal life too, which I think he does. I know he brought in someone last year to another motivational speaker. So I think this is really cool, but I'm hoping to see more of it in the future, kind of like you mentioned. Did you have anything else to add on the on this whole little tangent here?
No, I think these are just things we got to highlight in the news, especially reflecting our team. And they just good to see. I think just having things like a secret scrimmage hopefully becoming a real game is the most important thing, highlighting the news. And then as well, just getting associated with big names in recruiting. It helps us out there, get our name out there.
Yeah. And then the last bit of news here, there's a really great article that Teddy Greenstein put out on the Chicago Tribune, which is titled Porter Moser's Love of Chicago Kept Him at Loyola Despite a Tougher NCAA Tournament Road. So it kind of just talked a lot about how Porter, like during the summer, how Porter had a few different offers and then the one very serious offer from St. John's, right? Yeah, St. Yep. John's. And it talked about like his whole thought process going on, like how he decided to stay, why he decided to stay, and why he decided to stay despite some of the challenges that we've talked about before that come with mid-major schools. And there was one really great quote that I kind of like laughed out loud about, which Teddy was asking Porter about like scheduling. And Porter says, I'll show you texts from high major coaches that literally say, quote, sorry, we need either a Power Five school or a game we can win, and you're neither, end quote. Which, it's kind of like a double-edged sword, right, Lou? It's great. Like, I'm glad that people, that big schools think that we are a team that could potentially beat them, but it almost, like, it does us a disservice because then we can't schedule these games. I mean, we're playing Vanderbilt. That's our like our big Power Six conference team, which Vanderbilt is not all that great. But that quote specifically, Lou, how does that like, what does that do to you? Like, how does that make you feel, the whole like scheduling conundrum?
It's funny. I have to go back for Valley fans more than anything and Valley supporters. Nothing supporting this team, but Dan Mueller over at Illinois State had the same issue about reaching out to coaches and being like, especially after their year of just getting snubbed. They were the number one seed overall in the NIT, but they were the first team out in the NCAA tournament, which I don't believe they should have. But everyone in the response to him then after that was, oh, sorry, you either need to be a higher caliber team or a team that we're just going to crush. And I believe he actually took to Twitter to speak about this issue. And I believe it was Ole Miss that came back and said, let's get a game. And it is tough. That's the thing is there's no real area for growth in kind of mid-majors now with scheduling because it's like either you can get a chance and risk it and maybe get pummeled. Or again, as though we got to go back to our own situation with Florida. I don't know many people that said, hey, yeah, we're going to really crush Florida. Or we're going to go out there and win it. There was more of a question, hey, can we keep up with Florida? And I'm happy that my question was changed into, yo, I wish we had a bigger lead. Mm-hmm. But it's just tough for mid-majors. It's ultimately just a thing that is tough for scheduling. But again, hopefully with the Final Four, we saw the CBI. And with this is that after we won the CBI, Notre Dame reached out to us and played a game. So even winning the smaller tournaments help kind of reflect, but it's really kind of putting your name out there that can really associate with good games because it is tough. There's no way about it. I kind of would argue, though, Porter's quote and all, it's like, okay, well, if the big schools can't reach out to us, why are we playing D2 schools? So it's a double-edged sword because you risk it for the big schools, but then you might have to dumb it down for the easy schools.
Exactly, yeah. The next part of the article that I wanted to talk about a little bit is titled Why Stay? And I don't know if we ever got the official number. I think we got like an estimate of what the contract was, but in here it says that St. John's offered Porter 8 years worth $17 million. I don't remember ever like reporting that number. Maybe we did. Maybe we talked about it. I just don't remember it vividly. So he turned down 8 years, $17 million. Also playing in Madison Square Gardens. And one of the things that he talked about that Porter talked about that kept him here was like his wife and his kids, who he said would be flexible to go wherever. But his oldest daughter is a walk-on freshman basketball player at Loyola, which I must have missed somehow, but I did not know that. And I'm so that leads me to believe that they're gonna like stay here. Porter would like to stay here through her college education, at least, you know, because now she's on the women's basketball team. But I don't know, Lou, what do you think about his about this article as a whole, or anything that we've talked about so far about why he's gonna stay?
Yeah, I think it's just huge about kind of family and city first. That's a huge thing. I did hear, and I actually didn't even look into it, but it's funny. Yes, his daughter is a freshman at Loyola, and she's playing there regardless of walk-on or scholarship. Funny enough, I think I can just say this without a doubt. Usually if your parent's an employee of the school, you don't need to worry about any scholarship or funding needed. But a huge thing is, though, it's like he loves city. You look at him, guys. Anyone who went out to the Cubs game, he's there throwing out the first pitch. He's there singing the seventh inning stretch. So, and he's from Chicago area. He loves the city. So why not kind of stick with something that's been good to him and that he's kind of given back and helped get to a Final Four? And that's the thing is, like, regardless of, like, that money, he's getting paid. Like, you can't argue that he's not getting paid. Is he getting paid the big conference money? No. Was he offered that at St. John's? Yeah. But then you also have to look at the variables of, hey, I got to rebuild the team the way I like it, get new coaches. Then personal, it's a whole new city, whole new life, whole new things. There's no more Cubs that he's going to unless they visit the Mets or Yankees out in Queens and Bronx. But that's a huge thing, I think, especially with Porter and the building this whole brand of Loyola men's basketball, is that he stuck with them because of what the brand does. And then he himself is like, we got a new practice facility, so there's money coming in. So I think there's ways that he can even improve his situation, even at Loyola. And again, I'll quickly summarize with this, is when he came in, we were in the Summit League, and now we're in the Missouri Valley. So I could easily maybe see another jump sometime soon into another conference. I know the Missouri Valley is kind of great and all, but it's not where you want to stay long-term, in my opinion. Nothing wrong on anybody who wants to stay there, but it's not a big money thing unless it turns into it. And again, it's never a conference that people look at for two bids. So I think maybe Porter's looking at something, the Loyola as a team, where he can really control and help kind of guide to a new level.
Agreed. Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna say one last quote, and then Lou, I want a one word answer. Yes or no. Okay. You got that? Okay. So this last quote I'm going to talk about is Marquise Kennedy. It's Porter talking about Marquise Kennedy. And the quote is, he's 6'1", but he plays a lot bigger. He jumps through the roof. He's the fastest kid I've ever coached, electrifying, a true jet. So many people are in Chicago are excited to see him. So, Lou, my question for you, yes or no, is yes. Marquise Kennedy going to be your starting point guard at the end of the season?
Oh, I think he's going to be the starting point guard in the beginning of the season, end of the season. I want him to be my starting point guard. Marquise Kennedy, I'm a big fan club right now of Cam Crawford hitting threes, and fan club of Marquise Kennedy starting point guard.
Okay, so, yeah. There's your more than one word answer, but I like it. I agree. I don't think by the beginning of the season, but I think by the end of the season, he is going to be.
Again, is to add to that quickly, is Cameron Krupwick didn't start the season as their starting center.
Good point. Yeah.
So,
all right. So that's going to wrap it up for our news section here. And then we're going to get to the second part of the podcast, which is the conference teams, which we will talk about Illinois State, Indiana State, and Missouri State. So stay tuned and go Blurs.
And the Ramblers are moving on.
All right. So we're back. We're back talking about the conference teams, talking about the Missouri Valley. And I guess this episode is the state episode. We're doing three teams in the Valley who have the word state in them. So Illinois State, Indiana State, Missouri State. First one we're going to talk about here is Illinois State. And Lou, I know that this is your favorite team, besides Loyola, obviously. I know you love them so much. I know, you know, you send them gift baskets every year. So, Lou, I know you're only going to have nice things to say about our rival, Illinois State.
Yeah, so I just want to start off, I hate Illinois State. But, You know what? No, a few years ago, Illinois State should have made the NCAA tournament. I can't hate on that. They deserved it, and it helps the Valley. But anytime we go down there and play, it's not fun. Regardless of Porter has a connection there, it's just not a team you want to play. But let's get into it is where they are a team that they have a history of always getting to the championship. And last year they didn't. They had that little issue with the players off the court, and then their players kind of didn't live up. They had a heavy senior class, and that's why we'll go into why they're kind of you're a little worried about what the team looks like this year. But it's a team that you always got to think about. But yeah, so starting off with their schedule, their schedule doesn't look bad. They're playing teams like UCF, Cincinnati, TCU. They're playing UIC. Shout out to UIC for not playing us. And they're playing Belmont. So decent non-conference that could help them bolster into a strong conference play, I definitely think. But then we got to talk about their roster. So Illinois State, again, we got to talk about guys like Malik Yarborough on last year's team. They were huge, heavy, senior-loaded team. I think they had about four for definite, but maybe all their starters were seniors. And if I'm correct in saying this, their whole junior and senior classes are all transfers. They got guys, names I'm going to shout out, Ricky Torres. He's the transfer from Wichita State. So we got Transfer City. Zachary Copeland, it's just big transfers. But a name people would love to hear is Matt Chastain. Sadly, Matt Chastain did not play a full year or even more than two games roughly with us, I believe because he tore his ACL early on in his career with Loyola. And then during that whole sitting out, he really just didn't feel it. And again, he went to Illinois State because that's where he's from. He's from right outside Illinois State campus, I believe. So he's kind of home. But this is an interesting team. They're very, very heavy transfer. So a team that doesn't really know each other, I think. And I think this is going to be a hot seat year for Dan Mueller. Really, he's had winning records He's had a winning record every season he's coached at Illinois State, actually, when I look at this. But he hasn't really pushed in the Missouri Valley. They tied third a few years ago. They were fifth last year. So I think if they finish anywhere past fifth this year, I would start kind of keeping a watch out for pretty much Illinois State and how they're just going to do in a new culture, because I think it's going to be – you got teams like Missouri State now battling. Like Illinois State isn't the powerhouse anymore. It used to always just be you and I, Wichita, Illinois State. But now there's other ones in the field. So I think they're going to be kind of filtering down this season.
Some of the you touched on one of transfers, Torres, who probably – he might start later in the season, or he might start.
I think he actually might, just with the experience, if we're going to think about – I don't know who's gelling well. I guess that would be the only concern, because they're all transfers. We don't know how transfers really go in with the team.
I did a little bit of reading on the two guys from San Jose State who most likely will start for them. 6'6" forward C. Hillsman and 6'8" forward Keith Fisher. And of the two, I've heard a lot of really good things about Keith Fisher. He's like an athletic, bigger guy who I think can shoot some jump shots as well.
He's 6'8", so any athletic
that we need to look out for a little bit. He's going to be dangerous, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge point. Any big guy who's athletic is a scare. Bradley kind of showed us guys who were just big were scary. So guys who can move and keep up with us are going to be interesting. Another, maybe if I just want to do kind of keep an eye out for, would be two guys. Antonio Reeves, a freshman on that team, is 6'4", shooting guard-ish. I don't know how much ball handling does, but he's from the Chicago area. He was a kid who really was actually thinking about maybe Southern Illinois. So just to see him on the team, a kid from Simeon, is always a kid that you got to kind of know he can take over. And as we know, we've had a few of our fair share of Simeon point guards or pet players. But then Tyler Berninga, if guys and gals and fans of the Loyola basketball know, he was actually really considering Loyola or Illinois State when he was being recruited about 3 years ago or 2 to 3 years ago. But he's been plagued with injuries. So I think this would be a huge year, and he's 6'8 as well. His freshman year had injuries. Last year he sat out with a medical redshirt. So if he can come, if he comes back healthy, that's a thing I'm going to worry about. But I'm just looking at a roster that's pretty much a, I'm going to call this the Misfit Toys team, was, just because.
Yeah.
It's just tough to be like, like last year they had a squad, they had a solid unit of seniors, of guys like Malik Garbo and Tins, like guys who were there and have experience winning and just know how to play. And then now it's like, whoa, where did everybody kind of go? And
this team has a lot more question marks than answers.
Exactly. That's, yeah, that 100% the truth there. And that's where I think, like, it's kind of tough. You had guys leave to go play pro, but yet they weren't skilled point guards. And then you had a walk-on who got a scholarship to Illinois State, but then got told to give the scholarship back. And then he left. So I don't know what the atmosphere is down there as a team. I just know that winnings is something that's going to be hard for them to do. But if they do it, it's going to be impressive. But I just don't really see it.
Yeah, I think they have, like, the potential to be a middle tier team, but I also think that they, if they just don't gel and they can't find scoring from a consistent, you know, couple players, and that could be, it could be a bad season for them too. But yeah, so Illinois State, we'll come back to them at the end and talk about each of the three teams and where we see them finishing. But the next team that we're going to talk about here is Indiana State, which if you've been following for the past year or two, you know that they have two really skilled guards in Jordan Barnes and Tyreek Key. And then after that, they have a player who made the freshman team last year in Cooper Neese, who's a forward, a really good shooter. I think he's like 6'6". He's a tall guy. And then after that, it's kind of, I'm looking at the roster, and it's, I don't know any of these guys. Like, there's a couple that they're returning, but they really didn't play all that much last year in Christian Williams and Bronson Kessinger, who are their front court. Don't get me wrong. Jordan Barnes and Tyreek Key could both make one of the top three teams.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I think either one of them could be in the top three teams of the, like, Missouri Valley Conference. But after that, I mean, Cooper Neese is a good player for sure. But I don't see any guys that are going to come through, and I just don't think you can count on two players to carry your team. So the more and more I look at them, I think they're towards the bottom tier of the Missouri Valley Conference. I think it's going to be an interesting year for that head coach. Do you know who the head coach is at Indiana State? I can't recall who the head coach is. But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have a good season, that he could be on the hot seat too. I don't know. Do you have
Greg Lansing? Yeah. The only thing is, I know they have one of the guys who I think transferred to them. It's like they've had guys transfer from like Iowa, so it's just an interesting team. I don't think they're gonna. And so again, I'll get into this at some point, but I do not think they're as misfortuned as Illinois State, just because guys like Cooper Neese and just the guys have been there. Even those two guys are guys that could even potentially lead a team and produce something that's there. I think it's an interesting team. But I think it's a team that really just can do well depending on their state of play. I think they're in a better spot than Illinois State. They're gonna be in the bottom.
So. We definitely can differ on that. Like I think I'm a lot lower on Indiana State than you are, and I think you're a lot lower on Illinois State than I am. So I think we kind of flip those a little bit. But that's the valley for you. There's gonna be a lot of close, like this middle tier is really close in terms of like
who's exactly gonna, yeah,
it's like it can come down to one game, like a 2-point game, you know, that really determines who does better than the other team. So but yeah, I think the transfer you were referring to, his name is Cam Bacote from UMES, UMES, if you want to say it for short. But yeah, he averaged 7 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists for the team that he played for in 2017-2018. So 6'3". So, I mean, yeah, he could be helpful to them.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, yeah, it's just like guys like Jordan Barnes. He was like a big part of that team. So just interesting. I think we're just gonna maybe disagree on that. But I think this definitely isn't a team that I think anyone in the front of the pack has to be worried about. But I don't think they're gonna be as bad. They're not gonna be dead last.
Okay. I think you're right on that one. Yeah. So I mean, unless you do you have anything else to add on Indiana State?
Just dope jerseys. I think. I am very jealous of those jerseys, without a doubt.
The powder blue.
So yeah, no. Like the only thing is, like, I don't think one of their guys was even on a team last year. When I'm looking at it now, I don't see one Indiana State player on the first team, second team, third team.
Tyre Key had a really impressive.
Tyre Key was second team. What am I saying? Okay. I see that here now. But yeah, Tyre Key was on one of them. I can see like Cooper Neese sneaking up there, and then Jordan Barnes, because Jordan Barnes' stats weren't too far off from Tyre Key.
He had a great year 2 years ago, and then he kind of fell back a little bit. But now Barnes is going into his senior year, and you know maybe he does. Maybe he does take another step forward and get to that second or first team all MVC team. I wouldn't be surprised by that. I think he's going to be impressive.
No, the only thing is I'm looking at their non-conference, and they're starting off strong. They got Dayton, which is a team we're going to know a few about, and then they're playing Louisville, so another big school.
Okay.
Ball State, so interesting. And then they go into kind of a little bit of a mediocre level, but just if they can come out of those games strong, I think we'll see an interesting team.
Yeah, cool. I think that's going to wrap up Indiana State. And then the next team we're going to talk about is Missouri State. All right, so the last team we have to talk about here is Missouri State. And I don't know about you, but this is the team that's going to give us the most trouble. Like this is the one, this is in the past couple years, this is the first time I think a team is like better than us, like at least from a talent standpoint. I'm not saying it's all going to work together and get together, and they're not going to, I don't know if they're going to be the best team in the Valley, but just looking at it from like a raw talent aspect, they're impressive. They're returning a couple key guys, including Tulio Da Silva, which as we all know, he's their big guy. He gave Krutwig a run for his money and as far as like the player of the year goes last year. I think he finished third maybe behind Nick McGlynn and Marcus Towns. Sorry, I meant Marcus Towns, not Cameron Krutwig. But this year, Tulio Da Silva and Cameron Krutwig are undoubtedly going to be the top two for the preseason player of the year. I'm a homer and I think it's going to be Cameron Krutwig, but last year, Da Silva averaged 14 points a game, 7 rebounds, 1 steal, and 1 block. So he's a stat stuffer. Besides him, their starting lineup most likely would be Tyreek Dixon, who's a transfer from MTSU, where he averaged 5 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists a game. They're returning one of their senior leader guards, Keandre Cook, who I think he was like all defensive team last year, maybe.
So Keandre Cook is actually my secret on that team. Keandre Cook actually was also third team Missouri Valley, and he was all newcomer team with so Da Silva was first team, Cook was third team, but they both were all newcomer team, and they both were JUCO guys. So I think they're guys as a duo like that who have led the Missouri Valley last year and now have another platoon of guys to go with. I think those two guys are guys we're going to have to be intrigued about.
Definitely. And then besides Dixon and Cook, they'll most likely start one of their returning forwards, Jared Ritter, who, if everyone doesn't remember, he's 6'8", and he is a sharp shooter. He has a very nice shot, and he is not afraid to take three-pointers. And then probably the most intriguing transfer in all of Missouri Valley is Lamont West.
Yes.
Transferred in from West Virginia, where he played last year. He's a grad transfer. where he averaged 11 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 assist per game. He's 6'8", slasher, shooter, athletic, you know, I would guess pretty athletic on defense too. But he is a guy that I think is going to also cause a lot of problems for teams in the Valley this year. What are your thoughts on those five guys? Who are you looking out for besides Cook and Silva there?
Yeah, it's like it's just really it's just interesting. I don't know. Guys like West has to be the biggest kind of variable that we just don't know, because the guy's coming from West Virginia. Again, he's not dominating in West Virginia, but it's a different level of competition, and he's 6'8", so 6'8" in the Valley can take it far. So it's very interesting how things could pan out. And again, is this team already was showing last year that they were not a team to really joke about. So this year, I think if all things are going well for them, I think Dana Ford really can put a team together that is just going to really put the pedal to the metal and compete. And I think right now it has to be Lamont West. It has to be pretty much just making sure that they all can flow together. Because I don't know, it's just tough because I'm like, who's going to score? Like, is it always going to be now De Silva? But the thing is, they have so many options. So I think that's the thing that's scary about them is the options they have. And a decent, actually, freshman class as well. At some point, they actually were loaded so much they had to say no to a few kids. But they just got this, from what we've ranked or what we've seen, is a 4-star who also recommitted. He was a 2020 point guard, but then all of a sudden signed a year early to come out in 2019. And he's around a 4-star, definitely a 3-star, 4-star point guard. So he might make a run for it. Again, it's like us with Marquise Kennedy. We don't know. And I think that's what's really scary about Missouri State is there's a lot of talent labeled there, and we might see them actually making a push toward an NCAA run.
Yeah, besides the starting lineup, which we talked about a little bit, they have a few guys coming off the bench too. They have a returning senior 6'5 forward, Kabir Muhammad, who averaged 5 points, 4 rebounds. He's a small big, but he is a really great rebounder. They also have a JUCO transfer who is the number 2 JUCO transfer in all of the country. 6'8 forward, Gage Prim, who I actually, one of their reporters, I think he's a student, or if he's not, he writes for the newspaper at Missouri State. He was tweeting about how the lineup he has been hearing a lot about includes the starting lineup that includes this JUCO transfer, Gage Prim, as well as, kind of surprisingly, I don't know how to take this, having one of their freshmen start over Keandre Cook. He said that he had heard that Isaiah Mosley was potentially going to start over their senior Keandre Cook, which I don't know. I mean, if they want Keandre Cook to come off the bench and be like their sixth man and score a bunch, I could see that, but I just think that might be not really utilizing their talent in the best way possible. Like, Keandre Cook knows the value. He's been here before. He made 13 last year. Like, he is an impressive guy, and just to have him come off the bench, like, I don't know. I think there might be a little bit of a mixed message there between what the reporter was getting and what actually happened. And then, in addition to those guys, there's one last transfer because, geez, everyone's transferring into Missouri State. But Josh Hall is transferring in from Nevada, where he played in 2017-2018. So that was the year when Nevada made it to when we beat them in the – what did we beat them? Sweet 16 or the round 32? Was it
32?
No. Sweet 16, yeah. So he was on that team. He didn't play all that much. He played a lot in the beginning of the season, and then he kind of got shifted or got less playing time. But he's 6'7". He's going to be a junior. He averaged 7 points, 4 rebounds, and 1.5 assists. So he's going to be another just athletic guy that comes in and he might be a guy that we look at the end of the season and say he's, you know, one of their top 3 best players. You know, we just really don't know where how this team is going to gel together, but what we know is that they're going to be good, at least from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, I think if I can just chime in.
Yeah, go for it.
I think Gage Pym reminds me of another successful JUCO power forward they had in Elise Johnson. I think that's what, for some reason, and different coaches, but Missouri State has landed these power forwards who make a mess in the Valley toward for other teams. And I think if Gage Pym is that similar type to Elise Johnson, I don't know, but he's same kind of background as JUCO going into Missouri State. And Elise Johnson now is playing professional basketball in the NBA because he's developed that talent. So I think it might not see it right away, but I think he's something I would be worried about. Onto the Cook thing, it'd be very interesting. Again, it's like we said, so many guys transferred, so many guys got recruits. Dana Ford kind of really just took this offseason to really find guys he wants on his team, which is always good for a guy after his first year to kind of build that foundation. But it would nearly be, and I kind of not laugh, but really like, yeah, this would be, but similar to our situation with Andre Jackson. Andre was sixth man of the year, and then we were starting him, but then it was like, oh, we have Cameron Crutwig. So it really just how the team kind of flows. We have the Ford Cooper kid, the supposedly four-star point guard. So I think that would maybe be their only Achilles heel is, like you said, is there so much there that it's kind of building a little chaos where maybe lineups aren't really sure of who works with what? Or does it give him such a bonus that that Ford can pretty much just have whoever he wants out there for any given night on any different team? Because he'll play small, play big, quick. He'll have that many good guys. So that's a scary thing. But I think that also could be their Achilles heel. So I think with Missouri State, that's where it comes. But it's interesting to see the transfers into the Valley always, especially from big schools, always interesting to see how they react. So,
yeah, I want to give a shout out to, we talked about it last week too, but, Three Man Weave, who I've used a lot as a resource for like referring to different Missouri Valley teams. The one thing they point out about this Missouri State team is that they lost a few of their very good 3-point shooters. So although they still have Jared Ritter, who is a very good 3-point shooter, Tulio Da Silva shoots threes, but he's not very efficient. He doesn't hit them at a very high percentage. Keandre Cook, same thing. He shoots threes, but I think he's below 30%. So I do think the one way that you could maybe get to this Missouri State team is to force them to shoot a lot of 3-pointers and hope that, you know, it's their day where they're off. I don't think that they have a very good 3-point shooting team. So maybe you kind of just load up the paint. You know, you play both Frank and Cameron Crutwig together because Frank is incredibly athletic. And I think he could do a decent job at guarding Tulio Da Silva and load up in the paint and force them to shoot jump shots. And I think that is the one way that you're going to get to this Missouri State team. Otherwise, I think they're loaded everywhere, defense, driving, finishing around the rim. But I do think they're going to struggle from 3-point range this year. But I don't know. I think Missouri State's the team to – I think they're the team to beat right now. I don't know. I think it's tough to say. I could see it going either way between us and Missouri State. But if I had to bet money, I might bet my money on Missouri State right now. They're loaded. I don't know. Where do you see Missouri State finishing, Lou, in the overall grand scheme of things?
Yeah. So it's intriguing you bring up the 3-point. I don't know if people really remember, but anytime I remember our games against Missouri State was that they just killed us from 3-pointers. Again, is that one game? But maybe now because so many guys have left, this really does make an impact. So that'd be intrigued to see. Granted, Silva was 37% from three, so it's just an interesting kind of way to see how they play the game. But no, I would love to see Frank in there. Like this is a team that's scary, and I want to be able to battle with them. I don't want to just be like, oh, they got the better of us tonight. So no, I was like, I want to battle every day. I don't want to see a blowout. want to see a battle. If we lose by one, we battle. But I'd rather see win by two than just give up.
Definitely. So okay, let's go through these three teams, and let's say where do you think they're gonna finish in the Valley eventually at the end of the season. So let's start with Illinois State. Where do you see them? Just give a little bit of a range of where you think they could finish at the end of the year this year.
I'm actually gonna say bottom three, not toward any of my hate, not because I just think the team is actually just disorganized. I think that also the Valley is a lot better. I think that if you look at the talent, you got Missouri State, you got us, Bradley's even got Elijah Childs and that point guard. So, yeah, Brown, right? And then you and I has got AJ Green leading that team. And then Valpo, again, I'm not saying Valpo is amazing, but you got Freeman, man. Like,
yeah, this is, Illinois State is a team, I don't know where their scoring's going to come from.
I don't know their player. Like every team kind of has their player. I don't know Illinois State's player. If you can find me their player, that'd be great. But because they lost so much last year, and that last year team didn't even do that much to make that big of a splash, it's like, well, if that team couldn't do it, and I'm not saying they can't do it, I'm just saying it's really unlikely on my end from thinking that they're going to be able to really fight against teams that now are just pushing and pushing and pushing. As we go to three-man weave, they have them there in the middle of the pack, but I would flip them with another team or two.
So you think like 7, 8, 9, somewhere in that range?
Yeah, I definitely think 7, 8, 9. I think 7, 8, 9 is a good way to.
I think I'm just like a tad higher. I think I'm like 6, 7, 8. I think there, in my opinion, there are two teams that are definitely going to be worse than them, but I don't think that they have even the amount of talent to get them higher, to get them out of that. I would be shocked if they're not playing Thursday in Arch Madness, which means that they finish higher than 7. Like, I think they could finish 6th just because the Valley's weird and people can get hurt and all that kind of stuff. But I comfortably think they're 7 or 8 seed. Okay. That's where I got them. But then on to Indiana State, I think similar for me. I do think Illinois State has the potential to be better than them. So I think I would have them, I don't know, I think in the same range. But I do think that Indiana State, whereas I think Illinois State could finish as high as 6th, I don't think Indiana State could finish as high as 6th. I think I have them as a 7, 8, 9. That's kind of what I think. What about you, Lou? Where do you have Indiana State?
I have them definitely at least probably one. They're going to be ahead of Illinois State. Not saying they're going to be way ahead of them. I just think they're going to be ahead of Illinois State in somewhere in the range of 6, 7, 8.
Okay. So we're not too far apart, but I think we just kind of flip them a little bit.
Like, yeah, I know like, Indiana State's got some guys. Illinois State, I don't know who their guy is.
Right. Yeah. And then, I mean, Missouri State, I think we're probably on the same page here too, but I don't see them finishing lower than 3rd.
If they finish lower than 3rd, plagued by injuries or some string of luck.
Yeah, I think they're anywhere between, I think 1 or 2. I really don't think they're going to be any lower than that. They're a good team. They have so much depth. They have so much talent. They have some returning guys who we've seen them succeed in the Valley before. They have defense. They have offense. They have athleticism. Speed, they just have, they're stacked. Dana Ford, you know, hats off to Dana Ford. He's really amassed a lot of talent there at Missouri State.
Yeah, I'm gonna just kind of step up one there. If they fall anywhere out of 1 or 2, I'd be very, very shocked.
Yeah, it's a good team. I'm pumped to watch these two teams go at it. Like,
Loyola. Yeah. And then again, it's just my last piece on just this is. Why we're kind of so close is really anything after 3. Because again, as I put Bradley, my 3 right now, if we're doing top 3, is just no particular order, but Loyola, Missouri State, Bradley are my top 3. But then anywhere after that is 2 games can really move a team up or down. I think this will be another, as last year was a close fight for the front. I think Latin this year will be kind of like everyone's in the middle. And there's no separation. It's going to be right there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a top heavy sort of division here with like you said, like you have Bradley in that top three. I think it's gonna be top heavy with Missouri State, Loyola, and then one more team. I don't know if I'm comfortable saying Bradley yet, but I do think one of either Bradley or Northern Iowa is gonna be up there. I think it might take me a little bit to determine which team I have in that top three, but I think then you have your middle tier of some of the teams you've mentioned today, and then I think there is like a significant bottom tier, which we'll get to probably next week. We can break it down even more for you, for all our listeners. But anyone we talked about within these three teams, any players like that you could be really impressive that we haven't really talked about? Any like sleeper players or like for me, I know I mentioned him before, but I do think Keith Fisher of Illinois State could be a guy that we look back at the end of the season and we're like, dang, how do we miss on him? I mean, he's 6'8", he's athletic, he can shoot. I do think that ceiling for Keith Fisher there is like a second team, like Missouri Valley, and I think he could be a very good player on a pretty bad team. But that's the one guy for me that I think we might not have done him a complete service talking enough about him, because I do think he could be a very good player.
Okay. Mine would have to be, just because we kind of didn't talk, I kind of kept saying, but I just think Jordan Barnes, Indiana State, the guy led the team pretty much in assists per game, had 14 points per game just behind Tyree Key. So just an interesting mix of what they got. And then I think because their starters probably won't be as big, they'll be heavy with them to moving the ball quick. So I think that'd just be an interesting. I think he might do well. I think Darrell Brown is similar height to him, 5'10"-ish. So I think if they're putting up similar numbers, actually. So I think if he can do it last year, I think Barnes could do it this year. So
yeah, short guy, big heart, you know.
Yeah, that's like the Valley way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that's going to wrap up the conference portion. Just have a little updates kind of section here at the end here, if you made it this far. We have something really fun coming up that's in the works. We've been doing a lot of planning. And you'll see more and more of us posting about it on social media coming up here soon. But for our last episode before the first regular season game, so I think that's in 2 weeks, the home opener is November 5th, I believe, or November
4th?
November 4th?
No, 5th. No, I think it's
the 5th. Yeah. The home opener, the first regular season game against UC Davis is November 5th. So the episode right before that, so coming out the day before on November 4th, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do, if anyone has ever seen, First We Feast is the name of the YouTube channel. They have a program called Hot Ones with Sean Hayes, I believe, is the host.
Sean Evans.
And what they do is they eat hot wings and they ask really difficult questions. They're like fun, kind of challenging questions. So we have been talking about doing our own spin on it and doing a podcast 63 Loyola Ramblers version of it. So keep on the lookout for that. There's going to be some promos, some advertisements, some pictures, some really cool stuff coming out. I'm really pumped. I know, Lou, you're really pumped to eat hot wings and talk about Ramblers basketball. Like, I'm just excited for the point where we're having those last couple spicy wings and we can hardly contain our excitement for you know, Cameron Cotwig or Marquise Kennedy or what have you. So it's going to be fun. It's probably going to be a mess because it's going to be something new and something different. But I think above all, we're going to have fun, and I hope you guys have fun listening to us sweat our behinds off eating hot wings. Lou, are you pumped? Are you hype for Hot Ones Podcast 63 edition?
I'm just excited to be talking about basketball, eating my wings, my mouth burning, but then my heart burning because the season starts soon.
Woo, baby! I'm excited. I'm pumped. So keep on lookout. That's going to be the last episode before the regular season. We'll have our secret scrimmage to talk about. We'll have our exhibition game to talk about. We'll probably have starting lineup predictions and some sort of evidence on who's going to be playing. And it's just going to be great. It's going to be great. The basketball season is going to be underway. And we're excited. We're pumped. So thank you again for listening to another episode of Podcast 63. It's been a fun one. And don't forget, go Blurs.